Yeah, and so I'm starting to look at this the same way, where unless he shuts it down and gives it serious rest, he's just going to have to manage the injury the whole year. And the Steelers have such a good plan B, they don't need to just, you know, trust Russell Wilson to go out there and play at less than 100% and manage an injury when they have a perfectly healthy Justin Fields, who, when he's healthy, can do some of the things in the offense that they want Russell Wilson to do. I do agree with some of the Steelers insiders who are like, look, the guy's job is not to just stand in the pocket and get rid of the ball. It's to move around.
Bootlegs, all that stuff.
Yes.
Roll out, designed rollout.
Off-script plays he's been good at in his career. Moving around, extending a play, and then throwing it downfield.
A lot of his deep balls are when he moves off the spot in the pocket because he senses the pressure and just heaves one.
Yeah, and it's harder for him to do that with this injury.
Is he going to play before? I think I asked you this before last game. Is he going to play before the calendar goes to October? Now, forget about, like, does Fields just seize the job by being good? Let's just assume Fields plays at a level that would otherwise leave the door open for Wilson to come back if ready to go, okay? Just for purposes of this question, would he be ready to play by the beginning of October, in your opinion?
I'll answer yes, because they didn't put him on the IR, and I know, like, the personal feelings argument you made regarding, like, the Denver game and not shutting it down for him, but if he ends up missing four games, a month's worth of games,
it's
because,
like,
of an injury. Right.
It's gonna
reflect poorly on them for not opening up the roster
all right,
spot.
I'm gonna tell you right now, I feel like he will not play. He will not be healthy until October.
All right, let's hear more of Russell Wilson. Hit it, Jolie.
Say again. A couple years ago, but not like nothing serious.
This one, or is it the other one?
I don't know. I played football a long time. I don't know. I've had different injuries throughout your career. You know, you just deal with stuff, ankles and shoulders, the body just getting hit. You know, you have different stuff, but nothing too serious.
What is the specific challenge with the calf issue? I mean, what makes it difficult to come back from and to not aggravate?
I think the biggest thing is, you want to be able to do all the things you can possibly do, you know, and feel great about it and do that. And we got a long season, you know, we want to be able to play 20-21 games, you know, that's our goal, to be able to get to the end of it all. Obviously we're early on here, just getting going. And I think all these games count. That's the great thing about football. Every one of them counts.
Russ, you mentioned a couple of times about being smart. Has it been tempting to just say, hey, I'm ready? Like the competitor in you just wants to get out there?
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely that way. Anybody who knows me, I always want to go and play, and that's how I get my mind ready, my body ready for that. At the end of the day, I believe you got to play dinged up sometimes. And I think coach, you know, he's also, and the trainers just want to be smart too as well. It's just because, you know, we know it's early in the season. Like I told you guys before, you know.
After this, you can stop right there, Pony. You can finish his answer in a second. There's a big difference between playing dinged up, like playing through pain potentially, but otherwise not putting your body at further risk, and being able to do all the things required.
So
of you.
Until I started to hear that answer to Jeff's question, I was going to say that I'm hearing a Russell Wilson who, at least in this very public place where he obviously always puts facades up and has
he's never going to lose the media scrum,
a tendency to be this boilerplate football player who gives you a lot of banal platitudes and hollow cliches guy. That's just been his MO for a long time. But I thought I was hearing a guy who sounded like he knew it was not going to happen for him in Denver. And maybe I was exaggerating how badly he wanted to play in the game. Like I started to think that for the first few minutes. That the answer there, though, about how I believe sometimes you have to play dinged up, makes me think that he is doing all of this now with the expectation that on Friday he is going to have a conversation with Tomlin and he is going to make some impassioned play to get back out there and play.
Put me in, coach.
And, like, he's not a dummy. I'll give Russell Wilson that. He has to know situation with Fields, that if Fields keeps playing well, it's just gonna give Tomlin more of a reason to not take him out. And I don't think Russell Wilson wants to give Fields the chance to make the decision a harder one or tougher one.
If he's 4-0 by the time Wilson is really good enough to play, Wilson's not going to play.
Now, the other thing I will say, though, is I will make an argument against myself, which sometimes you do, Malzi. You will argue against your own point.
You've said usually that my arguments against my original points are usually some of the strongest arguments you've heard.
The other argument is Russell Wilson knows that as a NFL quarterback, he is dangling by a thread, correct?
Oh, yeah.
We watched Baker Mayfield ruin his career in Cleveland because he tried to battle through an injury. He played much worse.
He felt like he had to battle through it and prove how tough he was.
And because he played so poorly, it accelerated his departure, and they wanted to move on for him for the worst quarterback in the NFL right now, Deshaun Watson.
Mm-hmm.
Russell Wilson might be savvy and smart enough to think, man, this calf thing isn't easy to play on. I can't afford to go out there and grit it out and play poorly, because if I do, that might be it for me.
But he's in a tough spot here, because it might be it for him if he never gets the job.
I know.
Because Fields is good.
I know. I get that. But does he think to himself, well,
I disagree with your argument against yourself for this reason. I think that position, to play it well, and Russ has played it at a pretty much a Hall of Fame level in balance in his career, the confidence has to be off the charts.
I know. Yes. But could somebody convince him, hey, your career is on ice, why don't you wait until you're 100% healthy? And even if Fields is playing well now and it delays you getting into the lineup, what are the chances, given what we know about Justin Fields, that he's actually going to play well for not just two or three games?
He wins
but
four games in a row. He would have almost gotten halfway to his career number of wins.
Yeah.
Before this.
So you're going to, it might take longer. You're going to have to be patient, but that's actually good for the injury.
And then say good, Russ, good things come to those who wait.
And eventually, Fields' clock is going to strike midnight.
And you get the ultimate white horse,
yeah.
Ride in on the white horse, save the season.
Is that compelling?
It's compelling, but not enough to shake me off my original spot in response to you, which was the guy to play that position has to be hyper-confident and hyper, you know, of ultimate belief in his own abilities. And so I think he would default to, no, just get me out there.
So at the end of the day here, I initially, when we first were getting quotes back of Russell Wilson saying, I'm trying to be smart, my initial reaction or read on it was, this is a man who was resigned to the idea that he's not going to play in Denver and is now sounding that way. On further inspection, having heard most of the interview, mm-hmm. I am no longer thinking that way. I think that he knows he's less than 100%. But almost feels like he, not so much because it's Denver, but because he's Russell Wilson and a future Hall of Famer, he is almost owed the right to be allowed to play hurt. That's what I'm hearing. Let's be smart in practice, and let's conserve me in practice, because I need enough fuel to go out there and get through the game on Sunday. And trust me to do it, because I'm Russell Wilson and not some ham and egger.
I don't think that's going to work. Because somebody could count. Now, they wouldn't counter him, but if you're Russell Wilson, why are we paying you the veteran minimum this year?
Texas on the Edgar Snyder Associates fan text line. Let's hear Steve Palazzolo's thoughts next. All kinds of comments have been made about how Justin Fields actually played against Atlanta, even though the numbers weren't off the charts. Steve has prided himself for years on going deeper than the numbers. We'll get his take next. First, a headline. All right, welcome back. Arthur Smith today, defending Justin Fields' decision to never throw the ball in the middle of the field on Sunday, saying Jesse Bates is their Jason Bourne. Our Jason Bourne is TJ Watt, and you saw how TJ Watt wrecked their game plan. Now, never seen any of the Bourne Identity movies. That's Matt Damon?
Yeah.
Was he really a total
badass?
Yeah, was he
extremely?
Yeah. Is this a good movie series to?
I mean, have you ever seen the John Wicks?
No, that's about a guy that's pissed that someone killed his dog.
Yes, that's the start of a four-movie trilogy.
Yeah.
Do you like action movies?
No.
Then
I'd rather watch it. I'd rather see a good play.
A good play, like an actual stage production?
Yeah.
Like, so if I said, Pony, you could watch Terminator 2, widely considered one of the great action sequels ever made, or this is a high school bidding for a Gene Kelly Award by doing Godspell.
No. I don't like musicals.
Okay, so you want to see, okay, this is a high school theater company doing Hamlet.
Yes.
Macbeth.
Yep.
Those witches right around
the Merchant of Venice.
Oh, how about Death of a Salesman?
How about the Something Shrew?
The Taming of the Shrew.
Uh-huh.
Oh, that shrew was needed to be tamed, my friend.
Steve Palazzolo, the 33rd team, back with us. Hello, Steve.
Hello. How you doing, guys?
Steve, action movie fan? You like Jason Bourne movies?
I think I watched the first one, and then I stopped.
Fair enough.
I don't have time for movies anymore. I got four kids.
That's true. Oh, you probably got like the, what is it? How old's your youngest?
We're 4 through 9, all the kids. Like, we're watching Despicable Me over and over again over here.
Okay, so that's the movie just getting worn out on the streaming services?
Yeah. They watched every Star Wars and every Star Wars iteration the first half of this year. The second half of this year, it's been Despicable Me.
Have they watched The Lion King, Steve?
No Lion King. Haven't gone
there. Pony made an argument 2 days ago when James Earl Jones passed away at the ripe old age of 93. He argued that his role as Mufasa was more iconic than his role as the voice of Darth Vader.
I stand by that comment.
I'm not even a Star Wars fan, and I think that's ridiculous.
Thank you.
Steve, was it ridiculous that Fields never threw to the middle of the field, or was Arthur Smith's take that, hey, Jesse Bates is looming there and lurking, so that's why we didn't do it? Is that justification enough in your mind?
I mean, I think it's a little overblown, just because, not to be too results oriented, but they won. They moved the ball pretty well. I know they didn't put the ball in the end zone, but you know, having that nice drive at the end of the half to just set up another field goal. I mean, I think Fields played one of his better games. I think it's funny that he didn't throw to the middle of the field, but he was productive. So I don't think it matters a whole lot yet. So I'm not too worried about it.
What did you overall like the most about the way he played?
Well, I mean, he threw the ball accurately outside the numbers on those throws. He had that, you know, nice couple big time throws to Pickens. I thought Arthur Smith did a pretty good job of scheming it up for Fields. You know, there was about 50% play action. There was a bunch of design runs in there. And so I thought it was a good Justin Fields-esque type of game plan, the type of thing when you were trying to figure out if Fields was the guy for the Bears over the last couple of years, you would say, hey, why not roll the pocket? Why not a few more design runs? Why not a little bit more play action to help protect Fields? And I feel like the Steelers did all of those things in week one, and they got a pretty good game out of them.
Steve, if I told you that the Steelers would not make Justin Fields like a more dynamic passer, and by that I mean he would not suddenly start throwing 300 yards every game, but they would cut his turnovers down by like 60 or 70%, would you say that then the Steelers would have on their hands a very good player at quarterback?
I think it'd be a good fit for what the Steelers can do, especially if the defense plays the way they did on Sunday. So yeah, I think that'd be a solid starting quarterback. And
Steve,
then look at the league right now. Nobody's passing like crazy, so that would kind of fit in.
You know, this might freak you out or creep you out. I actually thought about you a lot watching him on Sunday. You were on my mind constantly. You know why? Because for years you've come on the show and you've, at times, we've asked you to basically give a soliloquy about like what you did at your old employer. And you would say like this, we're trying to show people that the box score stats are not what you judge people by. We try to analyze every play. And when I watched Field against Atlanta, I was like, okay, I know it says 150 passing yards and 57 rushing yards and they didn't score a touchdown, but I just thought the guy played well. I just thought he played a good game. And I said to Chris afterwards, I didn't leave that game thinking he made one throw. I was like, oh my God, damn, he'd really want that one back, or he put that one in harm's way. And early in the season, for a guy on a new team who found out he was going to start later in the week, I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad he thought of me. You know, that's how everyone should be watching the game. Let's really understand the performance and not just look at the stat line. It's funny, rushing quarterbacks kind of change your perception a little bit. I used to hate watching a college game I used to call it the JT. Remember JT Barrett at Ohio State?
Yes.
He'd have a game where he was like 9 for 20 for 100 yards, but he would run 18 times for 100 yards. And it was like the pass game was terrible. It was uncomfortable. But at the end of the day, it's like, wow, they moved the ball. And the 100 yards rushing is valuable from the quarterback. And, you know, Fields moving the chains, you know, QB sneak here and there, a keeper. Those things add up. And if you start stealing first downs on the ground with your quarterback, five of which, you know, Fields had the other day, mm-hmm. it might not show up in the passing stats, but at the end of the day, that's efficient offense. And it's, look, you'd like to be a little bit more explosive and do some other things better, but I thought it was a really good game from Fields on Sunday.
Yeah, but I think like you kind of tipped your hand, and I agree with, I find myself sharing the same sentiment when you said it's about not thrown to the middle of the field. Well, it's good enough for now. I think there are most people who just say, yes, it was efficient in many ways. It was, they move the ball enough, but there's like that lingering, nagging feeling in the back of people's minds, Steve. If they're ever going to go anywhere seriously this year with Justin Fields, he's got to become a better passer. That's certainly the camp I would place myself in after watching that game.
I mean, that's just reality anyway, right? I mean, even if he did hit a couple passes in the middle of the field and had the best game he's ever had, there's still 3 years of other track record in Justin Fields where you would say, well, I still don't know if he's good enough for the Steelers to, you know, make it to the AFC Championship and compete with the Chiefs and the Bills and the Ravens. You still don't know that, even if he has an unbelievable week one. So, yeah, I mean, if they're going to overachieve this year and make a run, of course, he's going to have to be a better passer. For now, it was a good start, and there has to be things to build upon. I haven't watched the film through the lens of why he didn't, throw to the middle of the field. Like, I watched the film, but I didn't do it through that lens. Like, did he miss this? You know, whatever it might be. So, yeah, you'd rather see a little bit better rounded game from Justin Fields. But again, what are the expectations for him this year? And how much would he have to exceed them for the Steelers to, you know, get to the Final Four, make a run through the playoffs?
Steve, are you fairly convinced that right now he's a better quarterback than Russell Wilson? Even if Wilson had, like, Mother Teresa touch his calf and it healed him entirely, would you still say, yeah, Justin Fields, not just big picture, but even right now he gives them a better chance to win?
I would say probably right now. I mean, if I was watching Russell Wilson, I would say, okay, I haven't seen him play well for an extended period of time since early 2020, since early COVID season was the last year I felt really good about Russell Wilson at quarterback.
So hold on. Even last year when I'm curious, I don't mean to cut you off. I kind of do, actually, because I just did. That five-game winning streak last year where he was putting up like kind of the good, efficient numbers did not really wow you?
I mean, he played at a similar level of what Fields did on Sunday. And we're excited about Fields because it exceeded expectations. But that's like game manager Russell Wilson. Like, he played pretty well. He was fine during their stretch. But they had ridiculous turnover luck, the Broncos. They ran the ball really well. And just the game flow just happened to work out in their favor for a stretch. And then it fell apart. I don't think Russell Wilson ever played as well as 26 touchdowns and 8 picks and whatever his passer rating was last year. I thought he was okay. He was better than he was with Nathaniel Hackett in 2022. But he honestly hasn't been the guy that you're trying to figure out. Where does he rank in the top 10? Is he in the top 5 yet? We haven't had that conversation with Russell Wilson since early 2020. And so last year he was okay in the middle of the season, but nothing special.
All right, Steve. So the Denver defense, are they weak up the middle, like their linebackers and safeties? Like, would you say from a tactical strategic standpoint, like that is a place where you would want to exploit them on Sunday?
Yeah, I think there's opportunities to do that. They struggled tackling last week against Seattle. The defensive front generally is interesting because they had a great training camp. There's a lot of reports that they were tearing it up and they started out really good against Seattle last week, but then they got moved a bit in the run game. So yeah, I think there's linebackers to exploit there in the middle of the field.
How would you have evaluated Bo Nix's pro debut, and do Steelers fans have anything to worry about from him going into week two?
Our podcast listener, we had a podcast listener who had a bet, and it was my son, my 9-year-old son, Harry, who makes picks for us every week against the spread. It was Harry's winning percentage against Bo Nix's PFF grade this year. So, like, Harry's at 56 right now, and Bo Nix is at 44. So that's a quick synopsis. I thought Bo Nix struggled. I mean, any throw beyond the sticks or 10 yards down the field, he was 2 for 12 on 10-plus yard throws, 3 turnover-worthy plays, couple picks. I think it was 2 picks. It felt like Seattle got their hands on every pass that was thrown down the field. It was difficult. It was week one for him, but they have to find this balance of opening up throws down the field and then doing the dink and dunk stuff that Bo Nix did well at Oregon and that Sean Payton likes to do. But I thought he really struggled throwing down the field. Now, Seattle might have an awesome defense. They are athletic and really feisty in the back end, and they got Mike McDonald there. It could be Seattle, but Bo Nix looked like he really struggled in week one.
He is now at Steve Palazzolo _ on X, and he is the co-host of the Check the Mic podcast, and you can go there and find him on X, and he'll have all the links there to listen to this podcast where his son, Harry, did much better in picks against the spread than he did in week one. So congratulations on all his success, Steve.
Thank you. I'll pass it along.
See ya. Goodbye, Steve Palazzolo. He did. Didn't. Our combined record between you, me, and Donnie was abysmal.
We picked, I believe, 6 games, 4, a money ball, and then Steelers. We combined, so that's what, 18 picks to make? We went 4 for 18.
Oh, my God. Somebody said, let's just do the opposite of what these knuckleheads said.
They would have won a lot of money.
You know, I did that one year with Dulac's Post-Gazette picks.
Yeah.
And I just went the opposite of him every week. This was like maybe in 2016.
Okay.
And I barely won money. It was not like a landslide. But I just committed to it from week one on because I knew he put the picks out every week. So whatever the spread was, he'd post the final score of what he predicted, and I would just do the opposite of what he said.
Nowhere near as bold a play as the famed The Bet.
Oh, yeah,
That shall remain. No. Remember Malzi's bet?
Oh, yes.
Very steady bet that I placed, but we're not going to talk about
it. 2 minutes away from PM Team Power Rankings with the Backyard Brawl on Saturday. We're ranking the 5 best rivalries in Pittsburgh sports. But first, Nelly headline. Time for Power Rankings. PM Team Power Rankings every Thursday at 4:30. Say 50% on installation of gutter helmet during their fall sale this month. Only 8885 helmet today. Malzi and I teaming up to rank the 5 biggest rivalries in Pittsburgh sports. And as a disclaimer here, nothing cute. Like, number one rivalry, Tomlin versus playoff win.
The Pirates versus themselves.
Yes, the Pirates versus competence. Nothing like that. Like, legit team versus team rivalries.
Winning teams versus ponies jinx.
Yeah. A little bit of a low blow, but I'll allow it. So we will...
Straight up rivalry pick.
Yes. We'll each name 5. We'll go back and forth and get the list of 5. And then once we have the 5 rivalries, we will rank them.
Okay, good.
Go ahead.
Steelers-Ravens. Easy. No fuss, no muss. Any arguments here? Still intense. I think the intensity has definitely shifted to be obviously like the rest of the NFL. It's not as insanely violent as it used to be because the rest of the NFL isn't. But you know what? You know who's really valuable to this rivalry right this second? Lamar Jackson. Because he's the perfect foil.
So he's polarizing.
He's really good.
You always try to stick up for him, and I always bash him over the head with great information.
He has won two MVPs, so really you are not using great information here. You're being a hater.
MVPs are a subjective thing. Mm-hmm. Playoff losses and playoff number not.
When was the last Steelers playoff win?
2016, Malzi.
When was
that.
Lamar Jackson's last playoff win? Last year?
Yes, they beat Houston.
Mm-hmm. Badly, too.
No.
No,
they was competitive for a half.
That's only 30 minutes of a 60-minute game.
That's the game, though.
Would you say if you were competitive for half of a test in school that you did a play? You had a competitive.
I was usually very high for those tests, so I played the 5th.
So you were out of it by 4 minute 20-second mark.
Number 2, although not officially ranked number 2, mm-hmm. Penguins Flyers.
Easy.
A lot of the starch has been taken out of that too, with neither team having great team success. But I judge things on how much trash talk takes place and how much generally the fan base loathes each other.
Pound for pound animus is great there.
And I think it is very high when people tell you things like, hey, don't have Penguins license plate or decal on your vehicle if you go to a game there because they will key your car and pop your tires. That's a pretty good barometer on a rivalry. So Penguins Flyers for me.
Yeah, I think the rivalry reached its apex, though, when Sidney Crosby was no longer the best player in the world in 2012, and Claude Giroux.
According to Sam Carcetti or whatever the hell the guy's name was.
I think he said he saw the world saw Crosby pass the baton to Giroux. I think you said Sidney Crosby's days as the best player in the world are now over after that season.
Yes, you love to remind everybody of that, Malsy.
Yeah, I know. Another, as we just get to five and then rank them, I'm going to go with Pitt-Penn State.
Mm.
I mean, they don't play every year. They might not play again for a very, very long time.
More Commonwealth hate.
But it's
don't
true.
Say state. Got to say Commonwealth.
Yeah, I just...
Which, what makes a Commonwealth different from a state? Why do we have to be so parsnickety about that?
Can you name the other three Commonwealths in
Kentucky?
The United States? That's one.
How many more did you say?
There's two more now. Two Commonwealths besides Kentucky and Pennsylvania. Be a little disappointed if you don't get one of the two. Shaka Smart.
Really?
Virginia Commonwealth. The university.
Yeah, you know what? I should have gotten that. And what's the other one?
Massachusetts. They got to be different.
What makes a Commonwealth a Commonwealth?
Yeah. As opposed to a state?
Yeah.
Glad you asked, Pony.
Just trying to be fancy? Just like, oh, we're better than you. We're a Commonwealth.
Glad you asked as I'm quickly Googling it.
Don't lump us in there with those silly states.
Commonwealth versus state.
All right, while you're doing that,
the distinction is in name alone. There is no other distinction. So they are absolutely being fuddy-duddy.
That is stupid then. All right, best rivalries in Pittsburgh sports. I'm putting Steelers-Browns on the list. I know it has not always felt like a rivalry because we beat them and usually beat them into oblivion, and it for a long time was two automatic wins, especially ever since they came back into the league in 99. But again, I judge this too. When we don't play them, how do we react to what happens to them?
We laugh.
And watching Deshaun Watson and watching them get blown out on Sunday, mm-hmm. and the reaction to when Myles Garrett gets ranked ahead of TJ Watt or wins an award over him, lets me know that the rivalry is alive and well.
I guess the last one here is I don't have anything for the Pirates. They just have not been good enough.
I don't disagree with that.
If we were doing this 10 years ago, we could say Pirates-Cardinals.
Or Pirates-Cubs
Pirates
during the
plantar
fasciitis.
During Chapman hitting McCutcheon.
Another
I mean,
good
the Pirates,
one.
When they were good, I think we're finding out here, you got to be reasonably good to have rivals. I'm going backyard brawl.
Okay. Pitt, West Virginia.
Do you have any major objections there? Do the Penguins have you? Penn's Capitals has cooled off significantly, too. That would have been another one.
Yeah, you still have Ovechkin Crosby, though.
But are we... Wait a minute. Is it getting cute if it's an individual rivalry?
Well, I know that, but like... Individuals can enhance a rivalry and cause a rivalry to take center stage, and I feel like those two guys
I just
put
think
that
of,
rivalry
I think
on
of,
the map.
I think 13-9
yeah,
has,
that's fine.
Has buoyed this rivalry for so long.
All right, so I would
should.
Put Pitt West Virginia 5. I think it's the fifth best rivalry in Pittsburgh sports.
You're not going to get an argument with me there, actually, because, again, I have to undercut myself a little bit by saying when they're not playing Pitt, I have no issue rooting for West Virginia. I don't think there are a ton of people in the rivalry who feel that way, but like they're borderline lovable at times when they're screwing over some other team.
What would you put 4?
If I were going to go 4 out of this grouping.
Yep. Yes, Malsy, I'm not asking you about the secondary grouping that is unknown to me right now. The one that we just did
you
for
know
the last
what?
5 minutes.
This is going to... No, I'm going to go Steelers-Browns.
I'm
still,
fine with that.
It still feels too fresh. Like, there's the one Browns win, obviously, in the playoffs that they're going to get a lot of mileage out of. But I just don't feel like there's enough history on their side of it. The Steelers just drubbed them when they came back to the NFL. And I know what, didn't they have a game that year, the next time Phil Dawson made the field goal, it was a shocking loss for the Steelers. But still, I just think that game needs a couple more big things to happen. Yes, I know Myles Garrett tried to kill Mason Rudolph with his own helmet, but still. It felt like an easy 4 for me. I think this is tough for you, but I feel very strongly about 3 if you'd like me to take this one. Go back to
I don't want you to put Penguins Flyers 3. That's why I'm reluctant to give you the power
but
to do
it. But you also don't seem like you feel you could put it any other
place.
Well,
I want to put Steelers Ravens 3, but that doesn't...
It doesn't
feel right.
Right.
But then again, I'm just picturing fans and how they...
The only time I've ever even felt remotely, not scared, it wasn't the right word, but like there was an obvious palpable attempt to intimidate was not at a Steelers-Ravens game, and I've only been to one of those that I can remember.
I'll put Penguins Flyers 3. I'll do it.
I went to a Penguins Flyers game in Philly with a Talbot jersey on, and the people who sat in the row ahead of us up in the high, the, you know, whatever, the 500 section, whatever you want to call it, the upper level, guy and his son, big Flyers fans, could not have been friendlier. The walk from where we got off like the SEPTA train though to the arena, I got MF'd more in like a 500, 600 yard walk than I ever have been in my life.
I honestly refuse to go. I've been to both three New York teams. Penguins Rangers, Penguins Devils, Penguins Islanders, Penguins Islanders playoffs, Penguins Rangers playoffs.
Penguins Flyers.
I won't do it. I refuse to go because it's just not worth it. I'm in my late 30s. I don't need to get arrested anymore.
Or get the absolute crap kicked out of you.
Yes. And sue someone.
Oh, you would now? Yeah, you're litigious now.
Two?
I have to put the game that actually... I have to be deferential here to the game that gets played twice a year.
No, you don't. You can do it any way you want. You're friggin' Mulsey.
I want to put Pitt Penn State number one and leave that for you here, but they don't play. It's a rivalry. The worst rivalries are the worst things. The thing I hate the most is when it's just all empty talk. And you, like in boxing, you know I love boxing. When two guys just talk trash at each other, but never actually like fight.
When Pacquiao and Mayweather danced around each other so
forever, and then it was a shell of itself. All it is a rivalry that now plays.
Four Steelers Browns, three Penguins Flyers, two Pitt Penn State, and one Steelers Ravens. Fan weather brought to you by Sun Chevy, clear and a low of 60. We're going to find out next what Justin Fields had to say about the game on Sunday. The injury report is due out in a few minutes. What's going on there? Is Fields going to play? How do we feel about that? Hear Arthur Smith on Justin Fields, plus a stunning revelation from Steelers practice on the offensive line. And Ray Fittipaldo will weigh in on that at 5:15, one of our top Steelers insiders. Total request Thursday at 5:30. You'll pick the topic. Quick timeout, and we're right back.
The way he handled the week, I mean, you get a sudden change, middle, late in the week, however you look at it. After that first drive, I thought we settled down. We took care of the football. I thought he operated the plan really efficiently. What fired me up is situational football. End of the half, things you work on, handling that situation. Be able to get points on the board, flip the momentum a little bit going into half. And really, at the end of the game, we had 6 out of 10 drives. We had scoring. Now, we want touchdowns, clearly, like that's not celebrating field goals, but the efficiency of that, two of them really situational football, because that one late in the game, you don't want to get greedy and you kind of concede it. Once he converted on that quarterback counter, that thing was over. We just bled the clock down. The game was over. Plus the plan. The way I looked at it, maybe it's because I coached Jesse and I got so much respect for Jesse Bates, but that guy is a game wrecker. Trying to neutralize him, which I thought we did, and that's what it came down to. Turnovers, our game wrecker wrecked the game. Theirs didn't. Still a young quarterback in this league, new environment, week one, sudden change late. I thought he handled that really well.
I think Arthur Smith's a big Justin Fields fan. We didn't have a way of really knowing until the real bullets were flying. But that answer there, that was effusive from Smith talking about Fields. And sounds like a guy that has more confidence in him if and when he has to play him again. And we expect it'll be Sunday. But I don't hear a lot of griping or, hey, we won, but let's talk about the fact that we didn't score a touchdown. Let's harp on the fumbles on the opening drive. Let's talk about maybe some missed throws or missed opportunities. It was overwhelmingly positive.
He was put in a tough situation, and did you see how he handled himself?
And I do think that coaches have certain things that they prioritize or emphasize. And remember, Arthur Smith was a head coach. So he's used to being the guy where the buck stops with him and his name is on the door that really matters. He sounds like a dude who thinks that these opportunities where you score at the end of a half or at the end of a game count double or count more. And Fields did that with the field goal drive in the waning seconds of the first half, and then that got extended with his run, and then it milked more clock, got them through the 2-minute warning, and left Atlanta with almost no time when they kicked the field goal to make it an 8-point game at the very end of the game. And he's giving extra points or bonus points to Fields for those things. He sounds like he was delighted in Fields to not force the ball over the middle of the field. Like, here we are on the outside questioning it, like, oh my God, look at this chart again. There's not even an attempted pass, let alone a completion.
And here's Arthur Smith saying Jesse Bates was there. It's practically like a white shark in the water.
Exactly.
Smelling blood. I think that he really, I think the thing that a coordinator likes a lot, especially when it's not like a quarterback where you could necessarily expect it, like a Mahomes, Arthur Smith dialed up a play. There's even a story about Jesse Bates texting him saying, you fooled me, basically. You baited me into this one finally.
You're talking about the one right before the half.
Right before the half. Arthur Smith dialed up a play that suckered Jesse Bates to the wrong side of the field and got picked more or less wide open. And if you're a coordinator who dials that up at a very specific moment in time, probably makes you feel really good when the quarterback executes it perfectly and the play literally puts 3 points on the board. He also, by the way, we're talking about, like, does he like the guy? It's pretty clear he does, because which of these two quarterbacks would probably remind Arthur Smith more of the quarterback with whom he had the greatest success, Ryan Tannehill? A good athlete, a bigger guy, a guy who could take off and run, and a guy whose arm, when he would show it off, was a pretty good arm.
Tannehill, very underrated athlete. The guy played wide receiver in the Big 12.
He was an outstanding athlete.
Yep.
He was a top 10 pick as a quarterback, mainly because he was such a good athlete for the position. Also, does Smith sound like News Radio 1020 boss PJ Kinchick sometimes? When you hear him, I hear PJ when PJ's getting really fired up and passionate.
Now, you must have PJ on the brain, because I don't hear that at all.
No?
No.
All right. Well, sometimes I whiff. Might just be my ear ringing from the open of the show.
I had a dream like a week ago that PJ and I were sharing a room in Florida for Pirates spring training, and he kept snoring so loud that it woke me up, and I took one of those old-fashioned alarms. And I hit him in the head with it.
Like the one that has the two little, like, bells on the top?
And he started bleeding, and I got nervous that I killed him.
I don't think you're having these.
No, I swear,
these
dude.
These are unbelievably deep.
But then he rolled over, and I'm like, okay, at least he's alive.
And he's hit him again with the alarm clock?
No, because he wasn't snoring anymore.
You ever think, don't tell that dream to Amanda. She might get ideas about you. Like, well, that she could, if you're snoring, she could.
My snoring has magically disappeared.
I think it's gotten into better shape.
I think it's the working out. Yeah. Yep.
I could almost guarantee you it is.
One thing about Fields and the Steelers offense that we've glossed over as we look into this game, They forced 3 Atlanta turnovers. They scored 9 points off of those turnovers, the 3 field goals.
Mm-hmm.
They won the game by 8 points.
Mm-hmm.
Take away those 3 turnovers, they're a 1-point loser in Atlanta.
Yep.
So it's cashing in on those that probably has Tomlin and by extension Arthur Smith tickled with Fields, even though the numbers did not blow you away. And I've described the way Fields played as solid, but given the circumstance, you turn in something solid in that situation. You know what it's almost like, for another quick analogy? It's almost like your mom was a teacher. You have lower expectations for a student. You're like, oh, this kid like doesn't try. He half-asses everything. He's not especially bright. And then he actually does like a good job on something and you're blown away by it. It's not like a masterpiece. It's not necessarily like when compared to everybody else in A. But you're like, wow, given what I thought of you as a student, you don't have the highest aptitude in the world. You actually applied yourself and did a pretty damn good job on this. Like you stunned me with your level of competence on this.
Yeah, my mom, I mean, teachers know who the kids in class are who are more like naturally gifted, talented, smart, whatever it might be. And my mom definitely, I think, would get pleasantly surprised. Do you want to know the cynical, though, side of that? If a kid really showed, I would say, like average to below average aptitude and didn't seem to really care either.
Mm-hmm.
If a randomly like great written assignment came out of the blue.
Oh, they think it was cheating.
They think the parents write
parents too, yeah. Well, I guess that's one of